Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. It's now known that the destruction to southern Louisiana that occurred as a result of Hurricane Katrina in August of 2005 was anticipated by some and should have been anticipated by others. In this interview, recorded in April 2003 and first broadcast in February of 2006, our guest is Mike Tidwell, the author of Bayou Farewell, The Rich Life and Tragic Death of Coastal Louisiana. Mike Tidwell describes how the vast marshlands of coastal Louisiana, home to millions of migratory birds and the source of one-third of America's seafood, is literally washing out to sea. The Bayou region, 6,000 square miles in size, remains the fastest disappearing landmass on Earth. An acre of solid ground turns to water every 20 minutes. An area the size of Manhattan Island, New York City, washes out to sea every 10 months. Mike Tidwell, welcome to Radio Curious.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Mike, the bayous are going away. Can you tell us why?
Yeah, that whole ragged soul, the Louisiana boot, the bayou region of Louisiana, it's, you know, very watery swamps, marshland, all created by 7,000 years of flooding of the Mississippi River, is disappearing. In fact, it's the fastest disappearing landmass on Earth. It's literally sinking into the Gulf of Mexico, turning into the Gulf of Mexico. An area about the size of Manhattan is subtracted from Louisiana every 10 months. The reason it's disappearing is because of the law of unintended consequences. Beginning really in the last 150 years, but especially in the last 75 years, the Army Corps of Engineers perfected levee building along the lower Mississippi River, thus making it impossible for the lower Mississippi River to flood anymore. The last great flood of the lower Mississippi River was 1927.
And the levee building is to keep the water off the streets and out of the homes of the people who live there.
Yeah, it's to keep homes from flooding. It's to keep, prevent destruction of property as has happened and from time immemorial. But the law of unintended consequences has resulted in the land sinking because it was the river itself, its flooding, that created all that land along the coast. Delta regions are a very delicate balance. The soil that's deposited is alluvial soil from flooding, and it's very fine soil, and it compacts over time, causing the land to sink, what geologists call subsidence. And what counteracts that is continually having new deposits of sediments on top. And that's what's created that whole land in Louisiana and delta areas all over the world. But if you levee the river and you cause it so it flows right out of its mouth and doesn't flood anymore, those wetland areas, those marshlands that were created, including the barrier islands created by the river, sink. There's no net new deposit to compensate for the sinking, so it's literally disappearing.
Well, are they actually sinking, or is the land itself being washed away by the tides?
Both. The dual problem in South Louisiana is that the land is sinking. Compounding the problem is the fact that there's a lot of oil and gas deposit along the marshlands of coastal Louisiana. And over the last 75 years or so, the oil and gas industry have scissored about 10,000 miles of canals and channels to get to those oil and gas pipelines or reserves. And that's caused erosion from the inside. These canals, once they're dug, they don't seal themselves. They don't heal. In fact, they get bigger. They double in size about every 14 years because of the erosion from tides and the wave action from boats. And so you've got this interior erosion happening, sort of like a moth-eaten cloth deteriorating from the inside, while at the same time the land is sinking. So you have this massive land loss. I mean, just huge areas disappearing.
Well, when you say an area the size of Manhattan Island every 10 months, that's monstrous.
It is. It's about 25 square miles a year net loss. And what it's taking with it, this amazing Cajun culture of fishing people who live along these coasts. Several years ago, my editor at the Washington Post asked me to go down to Louisiana and write whatever I wanted as long as it didn't involve New Orleans. And so I was just a wanderer with a backpack, just sort of drawn to the Cajun coast. And I wanted to interpret the region in some fresh way, and so I happened upon this idea of hitchhiking on Cajun fishing boats, just going from boat to boat to boat, like someone hitchhiking by car. But since there's people live on their boats for so much of the time down there, I thought, well, I'll just hitchhike on boats, and it was amazingly successful. I went from shrimp boat to crab boat to oyster boat, and it was this exquisite Huck Finn-esque experience of total cultural immersion. There I was. Once I got on a boat, I couldn't get off unless I wanted to swim through, you know, a quarter mile of alligator-infested bayou water. And so I went where the fishermen went. I talked about what they talked about. I ate what they ate. I did what they did. And it was ultimate, cultural experience, hanging out with these Cajun fishermen who still speak Cajun French and eating meals with them. But it was the fishermen who first told me about this staggering land loss. It is, in South Louisiana today, an enormous ecological calamity. And almost no one outside of South Louisiana knows about it.
Why does no one outside of the area know about it?
Well, that's a complex question, and the answer is complex. I mean, one is, not a lot of tourists go down there in the way that 30 million tourists go to South Florida and are therefore aware of the Everglades, and therefore there's a lot of attention for saving the Everglades, nor is the Bayou region of Louisiana near large media markets the way the Chesapeake Bay is.
Aren't the Everglades and the Chesapeake Bay ecologically different?
They are, but the fact is they are in danger, and there's a response. There's a federal and state, there's national awareness and a concrete response to repairing them in a way there's not in South Louisiana. And for the reasons I just mentioned, South Louisiana is far from media markets, far from the capital, far from tourist areas, and they are ecologically different. I mean, the Everglades is a beautiful place. I've been there myself. And the Chesapeake Bay, I live near the Chesapeake Bay, but as beautiful as those areas are, they can't compare to South Louisiana in that the bayous of Louisiana provide us with one-third of our domestic seafood. The bayous of Louisiana are habitat for millions of migratory birds from Latin America. The bayous of Louisiana provide us with an enormous amount of our gas and oil reserves, the infrastructure of which is now exposed to hurricane surge tide because the land is sinking. So it's an amazingly productive area in addition to being beautiful as the Everglades and the Chesapeake Bay are.
Mike, I want to hear what you learned about the people who live there in the cultural immersion when you were hitchhiking on the shrimp boats and the crab boats before we get to what's going to happen and is this an irremediable, unintended consequence?
Well, I've been lucky. I'm a travel writer. I've traveled over a lot of America, but I long ago thought that it was no longer possible to fall off the map in America and to spend time moving through at least a semi-wilderness area with people barely recognizable as your countrymen. But when I hitchhiked on Cajun fishing boats through these vast marshlands of South Louisiana, areas as big as the Everglades, I fell off the map. And, with people with heavy Cajun accents who still speak Cajun French, who really do eat this wonderful Cajun food that they cook up in galleys way out in the middle of nowhere. And it was a wonderful experience. People with wonderful nicknames like Knuckles and Papoose and last names like Boudreaux and Thibodeau and Lede, who are amazingly generous and took me onto their boats, immediately with enormous generosity, completely dispelling the myth of, bad-tempered swamp people who will open up with you with a shotgun. And so culturally, it was amazing. And not just Cajun people, but I spent time with Native American fishermen. There's a whole community of Houma Indians down there who are expert fishermen at the very ends of the bayous, extremely isolated. And then, of course, there's a large community of Vietnamese, South Vietnamese, who came to the closest thing to the Mekong Delta they could find, i.e. South Louisiana, when they left Vietnam in the 70s.
Do these different groups intermingle?
You know, not that much. It's sort of like a gumbo down there. You know, you've got all these different elements of this wonderful cultural gumbo, but there is some separateness. You know, some of the Cajuns resent the Vietnamese coming. The Vietnamese have done very, very well as fishermen and are now the aristocracy of fishing people in most of South Louisiana, in that they are the tuna fishermen offshore, and they've got very, very big boats, and they've gotten that way because they work together and they work very, very hard. And there's some jealousy there, but there's some friendships as well. The Native Americans, the Homas, sort of stick to themselves as well in the most isolated area because of a history of being pushed and pushed and pushed by Europeans to the very end of the bayous. They sort of stick to themselves and are French speakers themselves. In fact, I think the last Cajuns in Louisiana will actually be Native Americans. It's only the Homa people who teach their kids French. So the only 5-year-olds you'll see in South Louisiana today who speak French are actually Native American.
When you spent time on the shrimp boats and the crab boats, what was it like?
It was just amazing. No one on the boats wears shoes. You're out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you're out there, you know, trawling for shrimp or picking up crab traps. And taking a break and these different, it's so isolated that these different shrimp boats will tie up together, you know, for the night, and you'll be out in the middle of nowhere, 3 or 4 boats tied together, and cook this big communal meal under the stars and with alligators going by, and, you know, a passing plane at sunset would just see this enormous landscape of grass with these little speck of boats all tied together down there. It was just wonderful, the smell of the salt water, the sight of the birds. I mean, roseate spoonbills, beautifully pink roseate spoonbill birds flying against a tangerine sunset sky. It's a situation that just doesn't exist anymore. You know, communing with working men in a semi wilderness, and it's a great feeling. It was a wonderful feeling of liberation, and it was a great feeling to know that kind of a world still exists in America, albeit probably the last thriving culture in a wilderness like that. But again, it's endangered by this cataclysmic land loss.
Primarily a male culture?
Out on the boats, yes. It's still a predominantly male culture, although you'll see wives who will help their husbands on boats, but they usually work with their husbands on their boats out there. It's still a predominantly male world.
We're talking with travel writer Mike Tidwell, the author of a new book called Bayou Farewell, The Rich Life and Tragic Death of Louisiana's Cajun Coast. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Mike, when people see the demise of the Cajun Coast and their lifestyle, what are they talking about? Are they able to feel like they can do anything?
I think there's a lot of, first of all, in South Louisiana, there's been a lot of denial for years and years. I mean, this phenomenon of land loss, of the land literally disappearing, has been going on for a century. And people have sort of been in denial about it. What can one person do? The land's disappearing. And so people sort of just carried on, even though, for example, there's cemeteries all along the South Louisiana coast that are now in water, that that are sinking, completely underwater. There's entire forests of oak trees that are now pickled and look like unburied bones, these just trunks and sad, forlorn limbs everywhere, you know, marking the calamity of disappearance of land. And entire towns, I mean, the drinking water in some of these coastal communities is turning to salt, and these communities are going to have to be completely abandoned soon. And despite this happening around people, there's been denial that, you know, what can we do about it? And it's only recently that people have been actually, the point has reached where even New Orleans is definitely an endangered city. And finally, the business community in South Louisiana and the governor himself have made a commitment to try to restore the coast. That, of course, begs the question, what can be done?
What can be done?
Well, you first have to go back to the original understanding that it was the river, the Great River, as they call it down in Louisiana, the Great River, the Mississippi, that created that whole ragged soul of the Louisiana boot, created these swamps and these wetlands that are, you know, now the most vibrant fishery in the United States. And when you sealed off the Mississippi River with levees, and by the way, the water flows out its mouth, and a legitimate question is, well, if it's not creating land in the floodplains where it used to, surely it's creating land at its mouth, because that's where all the water's going with all the sediments. But in fact, the water's flowing over the edge of the continental shelf into an oblivion, so it's not creating land. It needs to flood its banks and get into the shallower waters. What can be done is you have to go back to the original source. You've got to get the Mississippi River water back into the floodplains along the coast of Louisiana without flooding existing homes. And the way you do that are with what are called controlled diversions. Engineers can divert the water of the Mississippi River from its levees further up the river and build artificial rivers and canals that will then get the water into the marshes that are sinking the fastest and disappearing.
Is there any plan for that to be done?
Yes, there is. There's a whole master plan called Coast 2050 that's been devised by conservationists and the business community and politicians down there to restore the coast. So they're talking about one diversion that would be so massive. It would be a man-made river the size of the Mississippi River where it passes St. Louis. And it would be diverted into this central part of the Louisiana coast where the water would flow into the wetlands, depositing sediments and nutrients.
A man-made river the size of the Mississippi?
Where it passes St. Louis.
That's pretty amazing project.
It is. This is a $14 billion master plan to save the coast. And a lot of people will say, my gosh, that's expensive. But it's been estimated that doing nothing will cost the country hundreds of billions of dollars in lost seafood, you know, hurricane damage. That's the other thing. These wetlands, these grasses provide a buffer against hurricanes for New Orleans and the rest of Louisiana coast. And as those wetlands turn to water, you're talking about potentially just cataclysmic hurricane impact, because this is the Bangladesh of America. It's flat, 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 and if there are no wetlands to absorb the surge tide of a hurricane, it's just going to smash right into the skyscrapers of Louisiana and go on out to Baton Rouge. So there are multiple reasons why that $14 billion master plan is a bargain.
Where is that in the process of development?
Well, some sort of experimental early small diversions have already been made. One began in the early 90s. One was just built in the last year. And already you're seeing exactly what geologists said we would see. You're seeing land building. You know, there's one small diversion that's creating thousands of acres of new land, attracting migratory birds, stimulating fish growth. And it's a very small scale example of what could be done if we really got serious and diverted much more of the river, up to 40% of the river, back into the floodplains of the central coast. So it can be done. There's no question. Nobody denies that diverting the river into these wetlands will preserve what we have now and create new land. It's just a matter of political will and finding the resources now.
You've talked about the law of unintended consequences, which is causing the problems that we have now. Do you see any unintended consequences by the river diversion that you are describing?
Well, it's an excellent question, Barry, and there will be some anticipated consequences that won't be nice from diverting the river. One is the river water is full of a lot of, you know, fertilizer and manure from Kansas and parts of Canada. And, you know, two-thirds of America drains into the Mississippi River. And you have to be careful how much of the river water you put into these marshes at any one time so that you don't actually poison them with too many nutrients. So it has to be managed. One interesting thing is if you build an artificial river as big as the Mississippi where it passes St. Louis, after a while, that river is going to behave like a natural river in that it's going to fill, it's going to go to the sea, and after a while, it's going to create its own delta, And that delta is going to become so big, it's going to block the river's passage to the sea, and that man-made river eventually is going to want to jump track the way natural rivers do. So 400 or 500 years from now, South Louisianans will have to divert the diversion because that river is going to want to jump track the way natural rivers do. So that's one consequence that has to be recognized.
So the concept then is to have a parallel Mississippi River going all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, beginning at about St. Louis?
No. The diversion is just going to be down in South Louisiana, just north of New Orleans, you know, I guess 150 miles maybe north of New Orleans. That's where the Mississippi will be diverted. It's just the diversion, the size of that man-made river, is going to be the size of the Mississippi River where it passes St. Louis, just to give you an idea of how big that man-made river will be. The Mississippi will continue to flow to the sea. It will just have part of its water diverted into this man-made river that, in a controlled way, gets the Mississippi River water into the marshes.
So on a continuum, if we apply the saying, you can't push the river has been pushed by the levees. And now there's an attempt to push it in another direction. What do you think is going to happen?
I think that it's going to happen. I think that this rescue effort, which can only involve the Mississippi River, and everyone recognizes that. If you're going to save the coast, you've got to let the Mississippi River flow once again into the coastal wetlands. It's going to happen. And I'm optimistic that it's going to happen. The resources are going to be found, and the political will is going to emerge. The thing that I'm not as optimistic about is that it's going to happen in time. The coast is so badly deteriorated now that it could reach, according to biologists and geologists, it could reach a point of no return where no matter how much river water you pour into the wetlands, they will be so degraded that they reach a point where you can't really rescue them. And so my hope is that we can begin this process of restoration as soon as possible.
If people are interested in learning more or participating in the restoration process, what should they do?
Well, they can contact an organization called the Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana. You can do a Google search on them. They're in Baton Rouge. The governor's office of Louisiana is very committed to this now, and they have ways for people to get involved. There's a grassroots group down in South Louisiana called Restore or Retreat. Their name says it all. Either we restore the coast or we begin to retreat. And they're very active as well.
Well, Mike Tidwell, author of Bayou Farewell, The Rich Life and Tragic Death of Louisiana's Cajun Coast, I want to thank you for joining us on Radio Curious. And before we close, can you tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately?
Yes, I am a big fan of the writer Rick Bass, and he's originally from Texas. He does nonfiction and fiction books, and he wrote a book about, I don't know, must have been about 10 years ago or more, that I just recently came across called Oil Notes, and it's just about his experience living in Jackson, Mississippi, and living as a petroleum geologist looking for oil. In the states of Mississippi and Alabama, and that sounds like a really dull book, but really what it is, it's just a wonderful reflection on life in the South. He writes wonderful essays about, you know, finding a litter of puppies along the road, and about, you know, this life of knocking around the Deep South in a pickup truck as a petroleum geologist, and it's just a very wonderfully written, vivid, and sensitive book.
Mike Tidwell, thanks for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Mike Tidwell is the author of Bayou Farewell, The Rich Life and Tragic Death of Coastal Louisiana. The book that he recommends is Oil Notes by Rick Bass. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.